Morning, everybody. I think I'm coming, getting over the cold that everybody has, so apologize in advance for any coughing or drinking. Our art is full of depictions of beautiful, perfect love. Our paintings, our songs, our films, like this one, two people in a canoe at twilight. The songwriter says, that's love. Most of us know that's not necessarily what love is like. Ideal love is beautiful. Another composer said, love is a many-splendored thing. I was going to use a more modern song, but it seems hard to find one that's clean, that has to do with love today. Another author said, love is never having to say you're sorry. But those of us who've been married for any length of time know that love is plenty of sorries in it. Paul is like a composer who sets down to write a beautiful love song in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. He gives us a picture, a perfect picture of love and how it ought to be. He dangles it in front of us and he says, this love can be yours and mine. Let's look for a minute and I'll read 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 8. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. He knows we're real people with real jobs in a competitive world out there, a world in which love is missing sometimes. We're trying to be husbands and wives and parents, children, brothers and sisters, and trying to relate to each other in love. And still, he tells us, he writes these words and says, as idealistic and beautiful as this is, we can experience it. In a world full or with pain and sorrow, this kind of love can and should exist. The last lesson I preached in October, we talked about the beginning of this passage and discovered how Paul talks about the priority of love. And in kind of a surprising way, I think to me, we saw that it was so important that really nothing else means anything without it. Today we're going to talk about the properties of love. I'm going to go through the rest of this passage and we'll just bring up some observations. This topic is so deep, as I'm sure you know. Each one of these ideas could feature a lesson of its own, but I'm not going to preach it for the next 17 years, I've decided. I'm going to try to do it today. So if we turn there, we notice that Paul starts out with patience. He says, love is patient. It doesn't fly off the handle or lose its temper easily if it doesn't get what it wants. It doesn't say, this is your last chance. No more after this, if you don't get it right. In the King James Version, it says, love suffers long. That's a very vivid picture of suffering love. It's not how you usually think of it. And it doesn't take talent to suffer. It's something that we all do to some degree. Some of us more and some of us less. But suffering is something, is experiencing something in life that we want very much not to experience. And that very much is key. It's painful and unpleasant to go through. That's what makes it suffering. It may be trivial or tragic. It could be as simple as waiting in a long line at a drive-thru or dealing with constant pain from cancer, the reminder that never goes away. We don't like it. We don't want to experience it, but the love that Paul is talking about is willing to endure it for the object of its love. looking at it as suffering long, that shows us that even when love is provoked, it patiently endures provocation. In the world right now, and for quite a while, getting, righteous judgment, getting the just deserts of something is very satisfying in movies and in TV shows. That's what we're waiting for, the bad guy to get what's coming to him. But love of this caliber doesn't even know what revenge is. Love of this type sees that mercy and forgiveness and compassion far outweighs justice. And it's greatly needed in our world at this time, but it's really hard to advertise. How are you going to go to someone and say, "Would you like some love? It suffers long." Does that sound like something you want? It's painful. But this world that has real suffering in it, maybe this willingness to suffer a long time is one of the best gifts that we can give as Christians. He also says that love is kind. And that is, rather than being selfish or mean or inconsiderate, kindness considers another's feelings, needs, and emotional states and acts to make them better. Kindness is seen in how we act. Letting a person through the cashier's line because they have one item and you have 15. If somebody knows that you're discouraged, they say something nice to lift you up. Love is an action and not an emotion. That's what we see from this passage. It's something that we can all do. And it shows itself, it shows what it is through the acts of kindness. Love does not envy. Envy or jealousy is a powerful emotion. But instead of being jealous of those who do well, love is happy to see others prosper. And instead of being displeased with another's success, we should desire it. When jealousy hears a good thing, it says, "Yes, but they have many faults too. Here, let me tell you some of them." But love, when it hears of a fault, it says, "Yes, but there must be a simple explanation for it. That's probably a really difficult situation. I probably would have not done as well." Jealousy put Daniel in the lion's den. It put Joseph in the pit. And it was the reason why the Pharisees and priests put Jesus on the cross. It's one of the most horrible things that we can hold in our hearts, one of the most insidious sins. The best way to cure it is to pray for the person that you're envious of, because that is the exact opposite of envy. And you can't hold those two things in your heart. If you pray for the person that you're envious of, eventually the envy is going to disappear and that love is going to stay. Love does not boast and it's not arrogant. The word for boast there is a Greek word that means make a parade. So make a show of what you do. Call attention to yourself or say, "Look at me," grasping for praise. That's one kind of problem. Arrogance is even stronger in a way. That's a grasping for power. A person who has that kind of arrogance is pushing people out of the way to get to the front so that they can lead. They're using people like stepping stones to get up the ladder. Pride shows disdain for others, but love shows grace and mercy and compassion towards them. Let's go the other way. Love is not rude. It's not friendly one day and rude the next. It always elevates Jesus and never diminishes him. Some people get a lot of praise in the world for being blunt, for telling it the way it is, for calling things as they see them. But true love is not like that. True love doesn't always tell it like it is. it actually doesn't have in its mouth what's on its mind, especially if the result is hurt feelings and not encouragement. It's gracious and tactful and polite. Also, sometimes a foreign idea, especially on the internet. Love does not insist on its own way or seek its own. It doesn't insist on having its rights, even what's deserved it, what it's owed. A big complaint in married couples over time is that the other spouse is selfish, and they wish that they were unselfish like themselves. That's a really interesting kind of thing, because ironically, when we look at selfishness in other people and wish that it would go away, a lot of times that's motivated from selfish desire, because we want them to be thinking more about us. It's a strange reversal. But if love, joy, and peace are the fruit of the Spirit, then selfishness is a major fruit of the flesh. It's not surprising to see it in the world, but it is surprising to see it amongst the body of Christ, because love is what sets us apart from the world. It should make us different in that way. It isn't possessive or demanding or stubborn or dominating. All of those are symptoms of different ways of expressing when we look out for our own interests. It listens more than it talks. And it doesn't insist on having everything be on its own terms or in its own particular way. And if it doesn't see any wrong in it, it rather chooses to defer to the desire of others as often as it can. That's a very unique way of being. Before we think about the other person who we think could use a little more love in themselves, we need to pray that that kind of love could be seen in us first, so that we're not selfishly looking for love from other people so that we can benefit from it. And we're not looking for ways to be served, but looking for ways to serve others. And not giving just to receive in return, because love doesn't seek its own. It gives, it loves just love. This is a very interesting word. It's not irritable. Some translations say it's not provoked or not easily angered. And that easily is the word. That's why irritable has that interesting angle to it. We're not supposed to be easy to trigger or set off. It's supposed to be hard. I've heard Dale say that you have to bluntly tell me that you're upset at me in order for me to get it, because I'm not going to be offended. That's the kind of attitude that we need to have. But do you know someone who's the other way around, who you have to handle with kid gloves, who you know that if you say, if you try to broach a difficult topic with them, they're just going to wildly go out of bounds with overreaction, and it's going to take forever to try to calm that person down. Another translation says touchy. We're not supposed to be touchy like that, or hair trigger. For that person that you know that you have to walk on eggshells around, or you want to avoid even talking with them, because when you finally get down to having to talk to them, you know that you have to carefully measure your words, because if you say anything that could be interpreted in a different way, it'll be taken out of context and twisted around and used against you in the future. That person needs to understand what agape love is, because it's specifically not provocable like that. It's not supposed to be touchy, but easy to get along with and incredibly forgiving. It's not resentful. I'm using the English Standard Version, and I've not seen some of these words for it before because they're more modern, but it's interesting to see that. The old King James Version says, it thinks no evil, or keeps no record of wrongs, or no record of wrongs suffered. It isn't suspicious, and it doesn't see a sinister side to every person and every situation. We all know people who are excellent bookkeepers, who keep a list of everything that's ever happened to them or been said to them. But That's exactly what we aren't supposed to do. Usually, the bad things that we think happen to us are just things we perceive. They never even actually happen. So if we learn to wipe those off, getting along with people will be so much easier. I think you can see that this kind of love just erases congregational problems. When we share that love with each other, those things just go away. Well, this love does not rejoice at wrongdoing. There's one thing that love hates, which you might think is kind of strange, but it hates sin. It hates sin and the consequences of it. Sometimes we think that when righteous people fall, somehow it makes us feel better about ourselves. Even if we don't choose to admit it, it's kind of a failing, I think, in most of us. But love does not do that. We're always looking away from the bad news and searching for good. It doesn't take any pleasure in evil or failures of people. Instead, it rejoices when truth wins the day, which it says directly. Rejoices with the truth. It bears all things. And this is really interesting because this bears, this word bears, actually is covers. Like covers like a roof. It hides things. It refuses to see faults unless it can help removing them. Like Noah's sons when after the flood, when he got drunk and was naked. His youngest son went in and saw his nakedness, but his older sons backed in with a blanket to cover him over without actually looking. That's the kind of thing that love does. It covers over sin. If it's aware of a wrong, it will try to avoid it, ignore it as much as possible, and hope that nobody else sees it, which is the opposite of gossip or publishing it to other people. It covers it and keeps it local. Doesn't criticize in public. It covers by being silent about an issue, but trying to restore that person. So not ignoring it, but aiming to help and keep it under control. And then, when the situation is resolved, pretending like it never happened, erasing it from the record of history. It believes all things. It sees the best in people, and in a sense, it's kind of blind, like we say love is blind. There's a lot of bad news going around, like sometimes if you pull over to the road and help someone who has a flat tire, that it might lead to getting you killed. Or that if you go into a business agreement, you'd better have a document to protect yourself because you're going to get robbed. That kind of thinking can move you into a very suspicious mindset. Sometimes it's worse to be suspicious than it is to be gullible, because it will switch our minds over into thinking, you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent. And that is not the kind of attitude we need to have amongst ourselves. Love doesn't think that way. You may have members of your family that are lost or members of the body of Christ. We just recently disfellowshipped from Zach Magnin. We need to pray for those people and not give up, because love believes that in the end, those things are going to work out for good and never gives up on those people. Love hopes all things. It holds out hope that things will work in the end, but this isn't a wishful thinking kind of hope. This isn't, I wish it would work out. It's a hope that waits for salvation with joy and full confidence. It's a trusting and an expectation that these things are going to occur. Many times the enemy, Satan, has told us in many ways that it won't happen. You won't make it to heaven. It's not real. It's all a fable. But love is stronger than that. Love is stronger than Satan, and it never gives up. Love endures all things. This is a military phrase that actually means hold the fort, don't give up, don't retreat, don't back down. It endures persecution and ill treatment and shame. It stares down entire armies and endures all issues. It holds on to people that it loves and refuses to give them over to the enemy. It perseveres and never gives up. Paul completes his picture of love by showing its immunity. He says it never ends. It never fails. It's immune to hatred, to evil, to jealousy and fear. Perfect love, John tells us, perfect love casts out fear. At the end of this passage, he talks about spiritual gifts, like he did at the beginning of this passage. And he says, those gifts are important. Those gifts that God has given us will help us build our congregation, help us reach out into the world and spread the gospel. But without love, they're meaningless. And in fact, they're temporary. They're only going to last for a certain period of time. Love abides and never fails because God is love. And God never fails. Love is eternal. It will be there with us in eternity. Well, this love is exclusive to Christianity. There is no other love like this in any other literature or in mankind. And we have only one true example of this, and that's Jesus Christ on the cross. It's our duty to understand this kind of love, to appreciate it, and put it into practice in our life. Our marriage, friendships, family, and Christian fellowship are all affected by it. When this love is given and received on every side, it makes all of our relationships what God intended them to be. I don't know where you are in your walk with God right now. Some of you may be walking very close to God, and some of you may be further apart. But today I encourage you to see the love that God has expressed through Jesus and to reach out to him and change your life. If there's anything we can do to help you with your spiritual life or help you come to Jesus, then come now as we stand together and sing the song.